cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Down There Aware. Today, we have two special guests. We have Sarah Director. She is a partner at Barash & McGarry, and she handles 9/11 victim compensation fund claims. And so we're going to talk to them. And also we have with us Karen, who she's a registered nurse, and she is a uterine cancer survivor and has been included in this 9/11 compensation. And so we're going to talk to them about their story and what this means for mm-hmm. other people who are living with uterine cancer. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for shining a light on this really important topic as well.
Absolutely. And thank you for being here, Karen. We appreciate you.
Yes, thank you for having me as well.
Great. So from what I understand, uterine cancer was not named in the compensation package with the 9/11 cancers. Can you first talk to us about what is that? So not native New Yorkers, we're in Florida. What is that compensation and what, happened after 9/11?
So after 9/11, it became unfortunately very evident that when we were told the air was safe and that we should return to our jobs, our homes, our schools, we were not told the truth. So approximately 500,000 people returned to their lives in Lower Manhattan in the days, weeks, and 8 months after 9/11. And during that time, we breathed in toxic air. And not only did the students, the office workers, the teachers, but our first responder heroes who were called to the site of where the towers once stood to engage in a rescue and recovery mission and then spent months dealing with the aftermath. So over the course of the many years and the dedication of too many people to name, unions, congressmen, John Feel through the Feel Good Foundation, John Stewart, who is a major advocate for the 9/11 community. We now have the 9/11 bill that has been fully funded through 2090.
Wow.
And what we have is we have a dual federal programs. One is called the World Trade Center Health Program that evaluates 9/11 first responders and survivors and determines if they are suffering from a 9/11 condition. And if certified, they can get healthcare, they get annual screenings, they can help get medications paid for, and they're being evaluated by doctors who are immersed in the 9/11 community. So they're familiar with the types of symptoms and illnesses that we see that other doctors might not even think to connect to the toxin. Mm-hmm. And once certified, you're able to apply to the Victim Compensation Fund for compensation for the certified illness. And families who have unfortunately lost loved ones to 9/11 illnesses can also seek compensation for the loss of their loved one. So that's, in short, the very short version of what these two programs provide.
Sure. And I bet that it took a lot of fighting and a lot of advocacy to kind of get that spearheaded, but it seems like it's a great in-place program now. And to be fully funded for the next 60 years, almost 70 years, is incredible.
The fund is fully funded. And yes, that was a tremendous fight. And unfortunately, the health program is lacking in the amount of funds that are needed, but and that fight continues. The slogan, never forget, likes to be used a lot for our 9/11 responders and survivors, and people have forgotten. So my firm, Barish McGarry, along with all the other 9/11 advocates, will not let anyone forget.
What important work you're doing. So we thank you for that. And I know that the victims and people who are living with conditions, I'm sure, are so grateful for your work. So thank you. And thank you for bringing this to our attention. So where does uterine cancer come into play?
So when the medical community first started evaluating what illnesses might be connected to the toxins, they were looking at mainly men, because the first responders, while there are thousands of women that dedicated their time through FDNY, NYPD, Red Cross, National Guard, it mainly was a male cohort that they were looking into. So you did not have enough women making up the initial studies to see statistically how many were being diagnosed with uterine cancer. So uterine cancer was not added, while all other reproductive organs were: prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer. So over the course of many years, the centers of excellence and the doctors that were working within the 9/11 community were seeing their patients reporting higher numbers of uterine cancer. There was even a higher number because you need to have a qualifying condition to even be seen. So women that were suffering from uterine cancer could be excluded from the health program, but in it because they were suffering from a basal cell cancer or had COPD or emphysema. So it took a very long time and it was long overdue, but in January of 23, uterine and endometrial cancer was finally added to the list of covered conditions.
Wow. And so does that mean now that you don't need a previous condition and another condition to come in and have that looked at, that uterine cancer just qualifies you immediately?
Uterine cancer is one of the 69 cancers that has been linked to the 9/11 toxins. And because the Zadroga bill is a presumptive bill, they're not looking at your family history. They're not looking to see if you have gene markers for these cancers. You know, a lot of women who have breast cancer that run in their family would say, I think I was going to get breast cancer anyway. Why would I be entitled to health care or compensation? Because the government had made a presumption that if you were exposed to 9/11 toxins, your breast cancer is a result of them, even if your family has a history of it.
Wow. That's important. I mean, that's incredible that happened. So Karen, how did you hear about this? How did you get plugged in? What is your story?
Yeah, well, thank you. My story is that I was on site at 40 Wall Street on the day that the towers fell on 9/11, 2001. And after, evacuating the building and being covered in dust from head to toe to get out of the city, we were out for a week, and then it was given the all clear to go back to work. A week later, yeah, the city was reopened. I want to say, I think 9/11 happened on a Tuesday. I'm trying to remember the dates, and then the following week, we were to go, reopen the office, go back to work, and the whole city was reopened, not just our building, So, I ended up, so we did what we were doing, and people were, kind of watching what was happening with the cleanup and the recovery operation and the rescue, ended right after the first couple of days. No one thought anybody would be rescued. Mm-hmm. And, we lived in that environment. And as Sarah was saying, you know, it was the whole lower Manhattan environment. So businesses, schools, churches, hospitals, doctor offices, you know, daycare centers, everybody kind of came back right before the end of September. Everybody was back. And it was just a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, actually, this June, that I was diagnosed with uterine and endometrial cancer. Mm. And, you know, when I was getting my treatment at Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is just, you know, top class service and care and research, and it's been wonderful to have that resource so close to where I live. They, you know, I didn't have any of the risk factors for uterine or endometrial cancer. All of my genetics came back that it was not a gene-related cancer. And, you know, because I live in New Jersey, I continued to see on TV the advocacy, you know, messaging around, if you were at not, you know, if you were downtown on 9/11 and you've since developed a cancer, you know, call. And so my daughters encouraged me to actually, you know, investigate and say, well, you know, mom, you know, you were there. You were there for, you know, 2 years after that. Mm. You still work down there. Maybe it's part of that, since there's nothing, you know, they can't find any other reason for you to have it. So, you know, kind of what the heck, I contacted Sarah's team and started just, you know, filling out the paperwork. And as Sarah said, uterine and endometrial cancer were only added to the list in January, but we were getting, you know, everything kind of ready, knowing it was going to happen, or being very positive that it would happen, because, you know, yes, most of the people that were studied in the beginning were men, because predominantly it was a male force that was in that recovery effort. Yes, there were females, as Sarah stated, but the predominant group were, you know, police officers, fire department, you know, Red Cross, et cetera. And a lot, you know, I would say the majority were men. And so there weren't enough women to study. So, but as more and more women were coming forward, we thought, okay, it might happen. So let's get the paperwork in. And then, you know, it thankfully got approved in January. I'd already had my surgery, chemo and radiation. Well, I had chemo. I hadn't had my radiation yet. I was actually starting radiation the next week after that happened, and after we did our first radio interview, Sarah. And so it was, you know, a process to get to make it happen. And you know, luckily, I'm not in remission yet. I'm still in active treatment. I won't be in remission. I have to have 5 years of no positive screenings, and I haven't, not nowhere near that yet, but I'm very hopeful. And I have started the process. So I've done the healthcare, the history taking, and the questionnaires are so thorough and so expansive, as you said, Sarah, that doctors who are not familiar with, you know, all of the complications or downstream effects of 9/11 would be familiar with. And so it's a very thorough process. And of course, then they had all my records from Memorial Sloan Kettering. And then I saw a physician who, you know, you do a screen, you know, they do a full physical as if you're a brand new patient. All of my screenings were up to date because I've been going to MSK. So I'd had my colonoscopy, I'd had my mammography since the cancer diagnosis, so I didn't need any of those things. But all of those things are available to people in the program at no cost, which is great. Mm-hmm. And so kind of I'm now waiting to be certified. I don't know how long that will take, but in the meantime, I'm happy to make sure that other women who, you know, were in that area during that time period are aware that your cancer may be have been caused by that, and you should, you know, investigate it. It takes a little bit of time, but it's well worth it if you're going to get the kind of health care that I've, you know, seen firsthand from the fund, the ability to get all of my screenings, EKGs, blood work, etc., at no cost. and the fact that there might be compensation, which, you know, when you're working and you're even with great health insurance, I still had significant out-of-pocket costs for, you know, my co-insurance, et cetera. And then I couldn't work. I was on disability. And so I was very lucky, fortunate, whatever words you want to use, that I had a disability coverage at my company, which paid 70% of my salary. But I did lose 30% of my salary for those 5 months that I was, you know, on leave. And so, you know, not everyone could afford to continue to live the way they live without that money, you know. So I think, you know, I think it's great that all of these things are in place. And I think it's just important to get the word out that people, you know, take advantage of it, or at least investigate it and see if it's applicable to them.
Absolutely. So if you don't mind me asking, how did you first discover your cancer diagnosis, or how did that go? You know, what were your symptoms? Sure.
Yeah, sure, sure. So I had already completed menopause and at the age of 50, and I was fine, you know, like I had the typical menopausal symptoms, right? Sweating, the big one, sweating, hot flashes, etc. And that had pretty much all died down. Let's see, I was 63. And I was sitting on the couch watching TV. It was in June, and my husband and I, and this is probably might be true in many couples, you don't always watch the same thing. So I was in one room watching TV, he was in another room. And I felt a release of fluid, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I just lost control of my bladder. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? So I went upstairs, I took a shower, I put on clean pajamas, I went back downstairs, happened again. So now I'm completely, you know, freaked out, basically, I have to say. And I went back upstairs, and now there was a little bit of blood in the fluid. Mm. So next morning I called my, you know, GYN, who I saw every year. I never missed an annual visit. I'm a nurse, as Sarah said. And I'm not one of those nurses who doesn't take care of herself. I practice what I preach. And mm-hmm. So I definitely, you know, had a doctor to call, had seen her the year before, and she was off. It was a Friday. She was off. And they said, just come Monday morning. We open at 8:00. Just come right in at Monday morning. I said, great. I came in. And by then I was bleeding. I had been bleeding then since that night. And of course I'm like panicked. I ran to the store, got some, you know, Kotex products. I was like, what the heck is going on here? So now I'm bleeding like a heavy menstrual cycle. Mm. And, so when I got there Monday, she couldn't do a, biopsy because I was bleeding too heavily, but she sent me for, an internal ultrasound, which I have to say is unpleasant.
Yes, they are.
But, and I had never had one before, you know, I didn't have any reason to ever have one. So they did that the same day, that Monday. She called the ultrasound place and she said, I have an emergency. They took me that afternoon. And then by Wednesday, I had stopped bleeding enough. She said, just call me every morning and let me know how the bleeding is. And she did a biopsy in the office. And she said to me, you know, look, I don't know what this is, but if it is cancer, you're going to go right over to Memorial Sloan Kettering. I work with this particular surgeon. I've sent other patients, blah, blah, blah. So the following week, I can remember it clearly. I was walking up the driveway from getting the mail. We live on top of a hill. I was getting the mail. The phone rang. I always kept the phone with me. I was waiting for her to call. And she said, well, it is cancer. And I've already called Memorial Sloan Kettering. They have you on the list. And they'll call you as soon as there's an appointment. Well, you know, I didn't wait for that. I called right over there. And they said the doctor actually has a cancellation on Thursday. So this must have been like Monday or Tuesday. Can you be here, you know, Thursday at 2:00? I said, yes, I will be there. And I met with the surgeon, and phenomenal surgeon. And she said to me, 70% of all cases are completely cured by just having a total hysterectomy. We do the total hysterectomy and there's no other cancer. And she said, there's no reason you won't be in the 70%. So I was feeling, you know, optimistic. We called the kids. We had to wait till we could call the kids because we needed them to be together. And one of them was away on vacation or something. We didn't want to tell one without the other. So we told them, we didn't tell anybody else really. And we figured, well, we're going to do the surgery. And if it's a 70% cure rate, we can tell everybody after the fact. So they scheduled the surgery. It was right after July 4th. I think about the week after July 4th, like the 11th or 12th of July. And went into Manhattan, had a total hysterectomy, stayed overnight. And then we were waiting for the, you know, the report, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of cancer is it? What stage is it? Has it spread? All those great things. And unfortunately, they do I had a laparoscopic total hysterectomy. They do an abdominal wash. And that's where they take a liter of fluid after the surgery is completed. They push that through your peritoneal cavity. They remove all that fluid, and that all that fluid goes to the lab. So in addition to your uterus, your ovaries and fallopian tubes and your cervix and everything going to the lab, this liter of fluid goes. And there were free floating cancer cells in there. Mm-hmm. And also I had, the cancer had spread from the endometrial area to the top of my bladder. So the top of my bladder, it had not penetrated the bladder, but along the top there, they scraped and there was cancer cells as well. So I ended up with, they went back and forth between stage 3 and stage 4, but now there's, you know, so they still say it's either 3 or 4, but the treatment's still the same. So, so that's not the news we were expecting. You know, you waited 2 weeks, we went in, and so now they tell us this. And of course, then they, you know, they give you a prognosis that makes you go home and, you know, try and figure out, should I just hide under the covers or should I, you know, pack everything up and give it to the kids and then let's take off and go, you know, get one of those Viking cruises and go around the world for 180 days and then come back and say, oh, if I'm still alive, great. So we really didn't know what, you know, it was very, I'd have to say, earth shattering for our whole family. And I finally told my parents after the fact, because I kept making excuses why I wasn't visiting them or whatever. So we finally told them, and that was, you know, you tell your elderly parents that you're sick. It's not good. But anyway, I, you know, went on to have chemo. I had some problems with the chemo. Chemo's not for the faint of heart. Definitely takes a lot out of you. I ended up having sepsis, having to be hospitalized, having dehydration, you know, all the complications you can have. And then we all agreed I would take a month off before we started radiation. And that's what I did. So I have to say that I've had so much support from family and friends and neighbors. And the team at Memorial Sloan Kettering has been great. And, you know, I'm lucky that I live close by to, you know, a NCI designated, you know, National Health Institute designated cancer center, not only at MSK, but Robert Wood Johnson. And I did get a second opinion at Robert Wood Johnson just to make sure this is the protocol. This is what we do, right? We do chemo, we do surgery, chemo and radiation. You know, you just want to make sure you're getting the best shot in the beginning, because if you don't, you know, the likelihood that the outcome will be I know what the outcome is going to be, but it would be shorter, right? You know, so, you know, if you can get, you know, 5 to 10 years, you want those 5 to 10 years. You don't want to be in that 2 year category, which is where we started. So, so, like I said, I'm very fortunate that I live, you know, in New Jersey where I can get to any of these designated centers. I can get the care I need. I also have had great health insurance, a Blue Cross company, you know, for the years while I was still working. And then I retired at the end of this, the past year. And of course now have Medicare, so with a Blue Cross supplement. So you know, I've been able to continue my care with the same treating team, the same surgeon, the same radiation oncologist, the same oncologist. And so I feel, you know, really lucky, and I feel very strong. I mean, I swam 4-5 laps this morning. You know, a few months ago, I still couldn't do that. I'm walking again. I couldn't do that. I'm still, my eating is still off because the radiation does a number on your lower GI. Mm-hmm. So I still have, you know, I can't eat a lot of fiber, and I have to be careful about what I do eat. And of course my glass of wine every night is gone. You know, I do have a drink once in a while, but it's one, and I limit it, you know? So if I know, like last night, I went out with my girlfriends for dinner and I had one drink, and I told the server, I said, please make it very light. You know, it was Aperol Spritzer, like my favorite summer drink. And I said, just make it very light. And it was very light. It was almost lighter than when I make it at home when we come to But so that's it. And I think, you know, I would encourage anyone who, you know, was down in that area for the immediate time, you know, either you don't even have to have been there the day of the event, but just those, you know, the year, you know, 8 or 9 months, whatever the allowable time is, Sarah, I don't recall. You were down there on a regular basis. I mean, not as a once, in, you know, in and out, but you were going there every day for school, for work, for church, for visiting a friend, or, you know, living there. I would encourage you, if you have cancer, to really just pursue it. Pursue it. There's no harm except for the time you invest in seeing if you qualify. And for many people, it can be, you know, my husband's already planning on what he's doing with the money. I said, no, that's my money. When it comes, if it comes when I'm still alive, I'm doing what I want with it. I said, if I'm, you know, gone by then, you and the girls can do whatever you want, but I have a plan. So.
Well, would you say that without uterine cancer being included and endometrial cancer being included in this, that it would have changed your outlook, or it would have changed how you got through it? How did the, you know, once you knew that uterine cancer was going to be accepted and that you were going to be compensated, how did that play out with you in your mental health or your emotional response or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me personally, I've been in the healthcare industry my entire career. I started as a nurse. I moved quickly into managed care. And my philosophy about that, and still is when you're a nurse at the bedside, you can help one or two patients or maybe 12 patients in a day. When you're in managed care, you can help millions of people because you make policy changes and decisions, coverage decisions, what's covered, what isn't covered. How do people get access to care? And so I've done a lot of, you know, health promotion, health policy and programming over my career. And I see this as an extension of that. So yes, I'm not working for some company and getting a paycheck every, you know, 2 weeks anymore, but I still feel like I can make, you know, people aware of what's out there and what they can do for themselves. Mm-hmm. It's always nice to get a gift of money. I don't think it will not change our day-to-day lives. I mean, we're lucky or very fortunate in that way. My husband and I both worked our entire careers, you know, our entire working lives. I wouldn't have retired except for this situation. I have to say my company and hopefully all employers, and I've seen some commercials now on TV, Sarah, I don't know if you've seen them or if you have them, down in Florida as well, where it's encouraging employers to really be kind and sensitive to their employees who have cancer and to make accommodations for them. And I can't tell you how accommodating my company was, what they did for me in terms of, you know, I wanted to work. And so I worked the day of chemo. I worked the day after chemo, and I didn't work the next 3 days because I was so sick. And then I went back to work again the following week. And they moved all my projects and everything so that I could do that schedule. And my colleagues all did that as well. and the care packages they sent and the phone calls and the flowers and I mean, even customers that I was assigned to, you know, were sending their good wishes because people knew what I was, you know, going through. Mm-hmm. So I think that that, you know, I would encourage, you know, people who are listening, who are in HR or in the employment, have a finger on employment and how they treat their most important resource, their people, during any health crisis, but especially since cancer is so prevalent now. You know, one in three people have cancer in their life, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be just, we used to hear the 1 in 8 on breast cancer, but now 1 in 3 people will have cancer. And so you need to change, when it gets to be that big, you need to change your healthcare policies around your employees. So I really think I'm just happy to have a platform where I can continue to talk about health promotion and people being aware of what's available to them, mm-hmm. and making people aware of how hard it is to, you know, we call it Hagman Enterprises, run your family, you know, family has, takes a lot of things, right? My husband didn't know how to pay a bill, where the paperwork was. I did all of that. So trying to continue to run Hagman Enterprises. I was very committed to my work and wanting to make sure that those projects continued. I was working with on a national level through the Blue Cross Association on American Indian health. I was working on the endeavor on Black mortality for pregnancy and maternity. So those were my two key projects, and I didn't want to let them go just to flounder, you know, while I was out. So I think those things kind of kept me going. And the fact that the company and the CEO and my team really went out of their way to accommodate me continuing to work, you know, in bed, you know, with an IV drip sometimes, you know, and it was just wonderful. So I think that, you know, people should be sensitive to that. If you have a, you know, someone who's a talented person in your organization, and even if they're not so talented, you still need to be accommodating to them and understand, because, you know, how many times do we hear people who, you know, your friend or somebody, oh, my mother's getting chemo or radiation. You go, oh, okay. You have no idea what it's like. And I shame on me for not being more empathic. Think about the practical things people were going through. Because you don't realize how, what it takes out of you and what it takes out of your family to, you know, just get somebody to go to the grocery store and get more Pedialyte. Yeah, you know, it's just things like that.
And how important it is that you have taken your experience and turned it into a teaching tool and a way to provide information for other people. I think that's really significant. I know that's what Alex has tried to do after her diagnosis, is try to turn it into something that's helpful. And along those lines, I have a question for Sarah, just a quick question. The people eligible, is it only residents or people who worked in that area? What about the people who traveled to help and were there for months?
So great question. So the help program and the fund is open to anyone that spent significant amount of time below, for the victim compensation fund, for the compensation below Canal Street during the 8 months after September 11th. So Barish McGarry, we have clients in, I think, every single state. We have clients outside of the country. Because when you look back, it's, of course, 9/11 affected New York the most, but it's not, and it never will be, just a New York problem, New York issue. Mm-hmm. All the people that lived, worked, that came from other states to help, they might not live in New York anymore. They moved to Florida or California or went back to their home in Alabama. And 9/11 is not a topic of conversation there like it is in New York. It's not remembered like it is in New York. So we are so blessed to have people like Karen and our other clients who help spread the word. It's one of Barish McGarry's big mottos is spread the word, because people outside of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, they can't connect the dots between their time spent in lower Manhattan after 9/11 and what illnesses they're facing now. They're not seeing doctors that are versed in these illnesses. So, and a point Karen made, which is so important, is you do not have to have been there on September 11th. If your job, say, started in January of 02, and you worked 40 hours a week through May of 02, you are considered a 9/11 survivor.
Wow.
While the dust might not have been as heavy as it was in the months of September, October, it was certainly still there. My law school, I was located and still is on Worth Street, and I was there on 9/11, and my school reopened on September 21st. Mm. Everyone I went to law school with, from the teachers to my student, the students, to the janitor, to the people in the cafeteria, they were all exposed. The toxic air did not discriminate. It doesn't care if you're male, female, black, white, Spanish, if you were 2 years old or 90 years old. We were all exposed, and programs like this and the advertising that my firm does, it's to help the community, be it if you're living in New York, California, Antarctica, we don't care. We just want everyone to take advantage of the programs that are out there for them and to provide the support. And I think there is, I've had clients tell me that it's given them such comfort to be able to know why were they diagnosed with this? Why are they suffering the way they are? And a lot, people are diagnosed, unfortunately, with cancer every single day, and there is no reason why. There's nothing to point to. And sometimes having that connection to that event gives them some closure in the why. It doesn't make it any better. It doesn't take away any of the struggles they're going through, but it kind of closes that question mark of why me? Mm-hmm.
I also think it's good. You spoke about how you have doctors who are informed and educated enough and experienced enough that they can connect the dots. They see different correlation and they understand what might be happening. We've seen that in other realms of healthcare that you might have a really awesome physician, but they just don't know enough about something specific that they can connect the dots. So I think that's amazing that you've developed that community. How did that process work? Did you have problems getting doctors on board?
So the healthcare program is the one that has the network of physicians that will do the physical examinations, like Karen explained. And so it's the government that has helped create these centers of excellence with these physicians that have dedicated their time, their knowledge, their research to really hone in on the conditions that we see in the 9/11 community. And it is forever evolving. When I first started doing this work, 15, 18, whenever it was years ago, there were no cancers connected to the toxins, none at all. And now we're up to 69.
Wow.
And I truly believe and I'm optimistic that through more lobbying, more study, more research, that additional conditions are going to be added. We see a lot of autoimmune issues within the 9/11 community. And as of right now, those conditions are not covered conditions. A lot of people with heart issues. Again, there are people in the community that would have these conditions regardless, but when you look at the sheer numbers, it's forever evolving. And we will continue to push to make sure that every condition that should be linked is linked, and that every voice within the community is heard. It's heartbreaking to feel like you are being ignored.
Well, we appreciate the work that you're doing. This is really incredible work that you're doing. And Karen, your story is you know, remarkable in that, all that you're going through still. And, you know, we hope that you, for the best will find that, remission mark. I feel you. This is year four. I'm just waiting for one more year, right?
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah. To say, okay, it's, you know, we're there. Yeah. But that waiting is, it's a long process, but, how incredible, you know, everything you've been through. So Sarah, if someone is listening and says to themselves, you know, I was in Lower Manhattan and it was during that time and I have this condition now, and maybe I want to reach out, learn more information, just to kind of see where can people go, what can they do, and what's the best next step for them?
I suggest they call me. You can look up my law firm. It's Barish McGarry. We have many websites. One of them is a 9/11 victims, plural.com. My direct phone number, 212-385-8155. You'll reach me. Call my firm. We have been doing this work for decades. We are so heavily involved in the 9/11 community, and we really do take it personally. It's not just a business for us. Almost all of my law partners were in Lower Manhattan on 9/11. Many people that we worked with within our building, within our firm, we've lost people to 9/11 cancers. I have partners that have been diagnosed with 9/11 cancers. So we don't take any of this lightly. There's a lot of people, a lot of law firms out there, but I'm biased, of course, because of where I work, but you are in very good hands. Just call, get the information. It's just really time. Mm-hmm. That could be wasted if you don't qualify, but you're not going to know until you ask. Mm-hmm. And it's really an easy phone call to make. So give me a call. I'm happy to talk to anybody. That's what we do.
Well, that's great. And we will put your phone number, your, any websites or anything. We'll have that in our show notes on our website and our blog. And so all of that will be everywhere, along with this episode. So, people can click right there and give you a call or send you a message. So, wow, what an incredibly important topic. And like you said, you know, I was in high school when 9/11 happened, and there was that never forget, never forget. But being hundreds of miles away, and, you know, it's not a front of mind thought all the time, but it really should be. There's still victims happening now every day, with all of these cancers and other conditions. And so, thank you for bringing this to us. It's so important. And we are just so happy to get the word out, about this. And we just appreciate all of the work that you both are doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.